Hello, everybody. I'm Parrish Alford.
And I'm Logan Lowry, and this is Double Coverage.
Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk brought to you by the Daily Journal and DJournal.com. Hello, everyone. This is Parrish Alford with the Daily Journal. I'm joined by Logan Lowry, our Mississippi State writer, and this is Double Coverage coming to you with Ole Miss and Mississippi State Talk for the next half hour or so. Logan, how are you, man?
Doing good, Parrish. Kind of an eventful day here in Starkville. Had the regional press conferences to go to. You know, interviewed all four teams, coaches that are going to be playing in the Starkville Regional here this weekend. And about the time I got home from all of that and was about to get started actually writing my articles for the paper tomorrow, is we got some big news. And, of course, we'll hit that up here in just a minute. But, yeah, it's definitely been an eventful day.
We will hit that up as well. And, folks, we're going to talk some regional baseball history in Mississippi this week, as both Ole Miss and Mississippi State host regionals in the same season. Big news in our state. We're going to talk about that. But before we get there, both of us have off-the-field football stories to discuss. Logan's is rather new. Mine's about a week old, but did occur shortly after we produced our last double coverage for you. Of course, Ole Miss has made its response to the NCAA. It has made that public. The NCAA investigation is still ongoing, but is nearing an end. The only thing happening right now, folks, is the NCAA continues to look into Laramie Tunsil's draft night comments. Now, sources tell me that those comments covered no new ground for the NCAA, that the NCAA was aware of those comments, that Ole Miss will indeed be able to document those comments as money having changed hands through the Student Assistance Fund set up by the NCAA. However, the NCAA, in light of how the comments exploded in such a public manner, has decided to take another look, a second look at those events, just to make sure it's done its due diligence there. So that is what's going on right now. And in the NCAA response, Ross Bjork even asked that the Committee on Infractions would delay a hearing for Ole Miss until it has completed everything. We'll talk about that Ole Miss investigation in just a moment, as well as some Mississippi State football news. Folks, before we move on, I want to tell you about some other podcasts you need to be looking for, a couple of Daily Journal productions. The Memo, our news podcast, Everything Northeast Mississippi. That's with Brad Locke and Derek Russell every Monday, Wednesday, and Thursday. And be sure to check out Prep Rally, all things high school sports in Northeast Mississippi. That's with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps every Wednesday, and we're back with you for double coverage, usually on Thursday, maybe Friday, give or take, depending on what's going on in the week. And the last couple of weeks have been quite busy. Let's get into those, Logan. Let's talk first about this Ole Miss investigation, and we'll come to the Mississippi State news in just a moment. As I mentioned, the Ole Miss news, a little bit older right now, has been out there for the public to process for a little while longer. The gist of it here with this investigation, folks, as it continues, the question that everyone wants to know is, how is it going to affect Ole Miss football in the short term? I mean, some of the allegations that came out that were made public were not new. They were things that that came to light last year, last fall, during the Laramie Tunsil suspension and his subsequent reinstatement by the NCAA, those Tunsil violations there. But bottom line, Hugh Freeze made his first public statements on the matter earlier this week at the SEC spring business meetings in Destin. The common theme there is mistakes were made. There are four level one violations against the football program. Three are alleged to have occurred. Three are charged to boosters or to people not directly associated with the program. One, allegation number eight, is right now a level one violation that involves assistant coach Maurice Harris, a Memphis booster, Walter Hughes, who has since been disassociated from the program. You know, there are a lot of things in there that the school argues Harris was not aware of when he advanced in this relationship with Walter Hughes. The school is going to argue and believes it has a good case to argue that that violation would be reclassified down from level one. And that was kind of the message that Freeze spoke of earlier this week. Four level one violations, three do not involve his coaches, one does. They believe they can argue that down, have a good case to argue that down to something less than level one. The big question here right now, folks, is what happens in the short term? You know, we know that Ole Miss has self-imposed 11 scholarship cuts over 3 years. And the case I'm kind of comparing it to right now is also the case that involved David Saunders, the former Ole Miss assistant, who in these violations, it appears he and Chris Vaughn, another assistant, were involved with a fraudulent entrance exam scam at Wayne County High School back in 2010. Well, it was a similar situation that ultimately cost Saunders his job at Louisiana Lafayette. That investigation completed in the winter. It was finished in the winter. And here are a couple of parallels here. One, if you're looking at how the NCAA might rule on Ole Miss, here's something to consider. The University of Louisiana Lafayette did not receive a bowl ban. Okay, that's significant for Ole Miss moving forward, because that's kind of the big question. A bowl ban is in play. The university is arguing that the case does not merit that for several reasons. One being that they'll argue down allegation number eight. Another, the university's words here, exemplary cooperation with the NCAA throughout this investigation. They also point to the fact that that three of the level one violations, as I mentioned, were committed by people who were not of the coaching staff. So a lot of things in play here. But a bowl ban is on the table right now. You know, maybe it doesn't happen, but there's nothing that has ruled that out for Ole Miss. So when you look at the ULL case here, ULL did not receive a bowl ban. Saunders was let go from Lafayette because of this fraudulent testing scam. All right, but and this occurred for him in Lafayette while he was a member of the staff with the current assistant coach, Mark Hudspeth, goes back to 2011. So the NCAA did not give the University of Louisiana at Lafayette a bowl ban. Okay. It did, you know, the ULL did self-impose 11 scholarship cuts over 3 years, as Ole Miss has done. Okay. It self-imposed recruiting restrictions. The NCAA expanded those restrictions. It placed Lafayette on 2 years probation. It added more recruiting restrictions. And here's a catch here. It vacated wins. Now, ULL had some very successful seasons where these wins were vacated. You go back to the time in question for Ole Miss and the 2010 season. That was not a very successful season for Ole Miss. 4-8, you know, not a lot of wins to vacate there. So I don't know if that will matter in the NCAA's thinking when it comes to assessing penalties to Ole Miss. You know, if you vacate a few wins from 2010, you haven't really done anything. You know, does that merit other consideration from the NCAA for a bowl ban? I don't know. That's something to keep an eye on. But certainly a lot of similarities in the ULL and Ole Miss cases, and obviously the similarity there with David Saunders involved in both of those. So that's kind of where the NCAA case for Ole Miss stands right now. The NCAA will at some point wrap up its second look into Laramie Tunsil. I'll tell you back. Let's go back to last Friday, which let me get the calendar out here, Logan, and see what day last Friday was, because that was, it wouldn't even be that. That was the day that Ole Miss went public. From the time that Ole Miss filed its response with the NCAA, the NCAA has 60 days to give its response to what Ole Miss has had to say. So that's kind of the next date on the calendar, 60 days. So we'll see when that comes about. After that, there'll be at some point a hearing before the Committee on Infractions, And it is at that point that the NCAA will assess penalties in the Ole Miss case. Now, Logan, what's going on at Mississippi State right now is not about the NCAA and not about penalties, but it really has not been a good public relations moment for the Bulldogs. Just talk to us about what went on today.
Well, you know, I guess in one side of things, nine players enrolled from Mississippi State's 2016 signing class. One of those nine people was Jeffrey Simmons, the five-star defensive end from Noxubee County. And now, of course, you know, a couple of months ago, I think it was the middle of March, a video hit the web of him striking a female. It was a fight between his sister and another female at an apartment complex in Macon. And it shows Jeffrey Simmons taking several swings and striking a female as she was laying down on the ground, hitting her in the face a few times. And, of course, you know, Jeffrey Simmons is not a small man in any regard. I mean, he's 6'4", 277 pounds, the top-rated recruit in the state of Mississippi, had offers from everywhere, could have went everywhere. Mississippi State signed him. It was one of those signing day surprise type of things. I know Ole Miss thought that they had a shot at him. Alabama thought they had a shot at him. Mississippi State thought they had a shot at him right there at signing day. And he signed with the Bulldogs and was kind of the prize recruit in this recruiting class for Dan Mullen. Then that video surfaces in March, and Dan Mullen has been silent on it pretty much. You know, he just every time he's been asked about it since it came out, he just said, you know, we're evaluating things, we're taking things under consideration, you know. And Jeffrey Simmons' trial has kind of came and went. He got a continuance a couple of weeks ago. He's actually supposed to be in court in about 2 weeks to face a sentence. What he was charged with was disturbing the peace and simple assault. Both of those are misdemeanors. But, you know, what's kind of came into question is, you know, we've seen so much, you know, domestic violence and just how big a hot topic that has been over the last few years, especially in the sport of football. And you know, Mississippi State has already taken a big, a blow, you know, a black eye, you could say, just because he was a signee. You know, he's not under their umbrella yet. He's never, you know, attended school at Mississippi State, but yet they signed him back in February. So they've already taken a little bit of a black eye just from their name being associated with his throughout this whole deal. Well, now it comes out that Mississippi State has gone ahead and taken the steps to admit Jeffrey Simmons into their university. He's now a student at Mississippi State and a member of their football program on scholarship. So that's another hit that Mississippi State's going to take. They're going to have to receive all the blowback from admitting a student and a football player like that. Now, they've put some restrictions on his enrollment. You know, they said they actually released something this afternoon saying that, you know, Jeffrey Simmons will have to serve a one-game suspension whenever his first game is, whether he redshirts this year and plays next year. In 2017, he would have to sit out a game, or if he plays immediately as a true freshman, he would have to miss the season opener this year. He's also going to have to go before Mississippi State's student counseling services and be evaluated by them, and whatever measures that they see, you know, if he has to go through some type of violence class or, you know, whatever type of counseling he needs and courses he has to take to complete to go, you know, to be on probation or whatever, you know, he's going to have to go through that. But, you know, I was really surprised by the lack of punishment in this issue. You know, the one-game suspension was really minimal for what I thought was going to come. I actually thought, you know, Mississippi State was kind of between a rock and a hard place with this situation because, like I said, he's not a student at their university. So he was really, you know, not under their control during the time that this incident took place. He had just signed a national letter of intent. The thing is, and I know a lot of people were calling for Mississippi State to just pull his scholarship at that point. And, you know, and you really couldn't blame the university if they did. The situation, you know, I'm trying to view it from both angles here. And I think if I'm Dan Mullen and I look at it, if he does pull Jeffrey Simmons' scholarship, you know that there's going to be all those schools that you barely beat out, you know, back in February are going to be lining up to sign him. And he's going to be on another SEC campus in January, you know, and that's the thing. And probably could be on another SEC campus, you know, before August. I mean, there's a potential chance that, you know, some other school could come in and sign him immediately and he could play right away starting this season. So, you know, you're kind of forced, you know, you really don't know what to do in that situation. And I don't think that, yeah, I've met Jeffrey Simmons several years ago back when I was doing recruiting. He was very young when I met him. His older brother, Dylan Bradley, plays defensive end for Southern Miss, and he's, you know, played at Knoxville County as well. I covered his recruitment, and I got to meet Jeffrey through that process, and, you know, seemed like a very, you know, a nice young kid. You know, you don't really know, you know, maybe they were just had their manners up, but apparently that situation was unbecoming of Jeffrey. It's not really in his character, you know, just talking to the people that I know that know him a lot better than I do. You know, it was just so out of character for him. That's just what I kept hearing from it. But I still, you know, if it was me, I probably would have, if I'm sitting in Dan Mullen's shoes, I probably admit Jeffrey Simmons into my football team and just go ahead and automatically suspend him for an entire year. He does not play for me in 2016. He is going to have to work for the entire year with no reward. I mean, there's not going to be any games rewarded to him this season. And if he can stick it out for that year without playing for me, you know, and if he's on his good behavior, he doesn't have any off the field incidents like this whatsoever, then next year, you know, he's off that suspension and he can resume his career. And that's kind of what I thought that Mississippi State might take. You know, one game is kind of a slap on the wrist for the type of black eye that they're going to have to take as a program just for admitting him. Now, granted, I do think all this is going to blow over and, you know, this will be a blip on the radar for him in a few months. But like I said, right now, Mississippi State's going to have to just deal with what they've gotten in. I think they knew that this was coming and they've had a couple of months to prepare for it. But at the same time, they're kind of taking their medicine right now. This is something that's not looking good for Mississippi State right now. But like I said, I think it will blow over in the coming weeks.
Well, it must be demeaning to the young woman that he was pounding on in the video to find that what she endured there is only worth the cost of a game ticket for Mississippi State and South Alabama. Okay.
Yeah, and
the punishment here is light, as you said. But look, Logan, so many college athletes receive second chances and turn around and have success stories. Ole Miss quarterback Chad Kelly is an example of that right now. That being said, lots of times that second chance has to come about by the athlete leaving one program and going to another. And that's where this little gray area, I think, helps Dan Mullen. He was not a part of the program. I agree with you. I think he can be admitted to the program. The punishment needs to be more stern than what we're seeing handed down.
Right. And the female in this situation, she also was charged in this situation. She's also
right.
Going to,
right.
But you know, it wasn't that she was an innocent bystander by any means, but, and I'm definitely not condoning what Jeffrey Simmons, the action he taken at all. I mean, I definitely, that was a despicable thing that I saw in that video. And I'm sure you saw it too. I mean, no man should ever put his hands on a woman in any situation, regardless of what happened. But at the same time, she, you know, it was a fight between his sister and this female over some words said about reading the apology, you know, that I saw Jeffrey Simmons post to his Facebook page. It was about his two deceased nephews. And I don't really know, you know, the story behind all the whole situation, but apparently there had been some beef between these two families for quite some time and looked like it had just kind of spilled over into that situation. But at the same time, you know, all of these people are going to be in court down in Macon in a couple of weeks. The matter will be cleared up legally at that time. And you hope for a guy like this that, you know, that some type of message was sent, you know, that some kind of light went off for him, you know, and he's able to overcome this. You know, there's obviously plenty of talent there. You know, when you've got all these colleges lining up to sign him, you know, just hoping that he becomes part of their program. There's obviously plenty of talent there, and I've seen Jeffrey Simmons play plenty of times over the last 4 years that he was playing for Knox County. He's a tremendous talent, you know, kind of a once-in-a-lifetime type of talent. And you hope that that's not wasted. And you hope that he can turn this story around and turn it into a positive. And you don't see anything like this happen for him in the future.
Well, Logan, we got about 10 minutes left to talk about the historic week of college baseball in Mississippi. And that's really not going to give it its due. But let's get right into it. Let's talk about the Starkville Regional first. What do you see in that field?
Well, it's a very good field. I mean, you look at the RPI. I think if you the 1 through 4 seeds in this regional have the highest collective RPI of any of the regionals that's out there. I do think that Ole Miss's regional is a little bit more difficult. I mean, you look at the 4 seed there with Utah, but I think that both of the Mississippi regionals that are taking place this weekend are probably the two most difficult in the country. But you know, Mississippi State faces Southeast Missouri State. To start off with, I know this is a team that Ole Miss has defeated twice already this season. They've got the nation's strikeout leader, Joey Lucchesi. I think I'm saying his name correctly. He's a senior left-hander, struck out 145 batters in 107 innings this season. So just an outstanding talent out there in the mound. And when you have somebody like that you can throw out there, you know, that can stifle any offense and keep you into the game and keep it manageable. That's a game that Southeast Missouri State can win if he goes out there and pitches his game and keeps Mississippi State from putting up some runs. That gives them a chance to score some runs as well. It was kind of a chess match today at the press conference because the Southeast Missouri State coach didn't announce Lucchesi as a starter because he woke up with some stiffness this morning when he got to Starkville. He was a little stiff, and it's going to be kind of a game-time decision whether he pitches. John Cohen won't announce his starter because Southeast Missouri State hasn't announced their starter, and it's just kind of a chess match in this situation. So we don't know either anybody that's going to run out there to the mound at 1:30 tomorrow to pitch in that ball game, but you know, looking at some of the other teams, Louisiana Tech, obviously Cal State Fullerton is a traditional powerhouse. And both of those teams have coaching ties to Mississippi State. Obviously, you look at Dietrich, the pitching coach from Cal State Fullerton. That's a guy that was at the top of Mississippi State's list when Butch Thompson took the job at Auburn this past year. Mississippi State went out and tried to hire Dietrich to be the pitching coach, and some sites actually reported he was going to be the pitching coach for Mississippi State, that he accepted the position. He visited Starkville. Something happened along the way where neither party thought that it was a good fit for him, and 3 days later, Mississippi State hires Wes Johnson. Cal State Fullerton has the lowest ERA in the country. I mean, that's how good of a pitching coach Dietrich is. And, you know, if Mississippi State does have to play Cal State Fullerton, that's the number 2 seed later on in this tournament, that's going to be a good matchup, you know, because you're going to see some quality arms out there on the mound. And then Louisiana Tech, Jake Wells is assistant coach for Louisiana Tech. He was John Cohen's first base coach for 2 seasons, 2013 and 2014. He was obviously on that runner-up team that Mississippi State had in 2013. So he brings a lot of experience. He was talking about how he's been able to tell the players at Louisiana Tech about Duty Noble Field, playing there, just the atmosphere that they're going to experience this weekend. So a lot of storylines, you know, going back to Mississippi State. And, you know, Mississippi State also earned their first national seed. Obviously, Mississippi State has a storied tradition in baseball, have accomplished quite a lot in the program's history, but this is the first time ever they've been a national seed. So if Mississippi State can make it past this weekend, they'll face the winner of the Lafayette Regional next weekend in the Super Regional here in Starkville. So Mississippi State, if they take care of things, they won't have to leave Starkville before they reach Omaha.
Well, Logan, 2 words for you regarding that Southeast Missouri pitcher, Grady Henchman. Okay, Grady Henchman was the senior, maybe a fifth-year guy, ace for Western Kentucky in 2004 at the Oxford Regional, the first regional Ole Miss ever hosted. You know, Ole Miss was a 1, Western was a 4. Grady Henchman, with an ERA of around 5, comes in and throws a 2-hit shutout, and Ole Miss drops that first game 1-0. They were eliminated the next morning by Washington. It's the only home regional Ole Miss has lost. The point is, you can have a great pitcher on a mid-major. Maybe you don't have depth along that staff. Maybe it's not a dominant staff, but you can have one guy, and one guy can dominate a baseball game. So anytime somebody comes in as the nation's strikeout leader or anything like that, you respect that, and you respect what the guy can do on the mound. So, and I'm sure Mississippi State will, but you know, we always, this time of year, when there are good pitchers coming in an Oxford Regional, as there are this year, we often think about Grady Hinchman from Western Kentucky. About that Oxford Regional, a little bit, Ole Miss will face a pretty good right-hander tomorrow night in Jason Rose, or maybe tonight, depending on when you're listening to this. Rose is the Pac-12 strikeout leader with 102. He's got about a 2.6 ERA. He's 8-4. You know, Utah, they're not your regular number four. Lots of times you think about the number four seed in a regional being one of those mid-major teams. That doesn't mean they are of poor quality. The Western Kentucky team that came to Ole Miss several years ago in 2009 pushed the Rebels to that if game on Monday, and it took one of the great sports performances in Ole Miss history with Drew Pomeranz striking out 15 for Ole Miss to advance from that Oxford Regional. So it's not that the mid-majors can't compete and don't belong, but it's just you don't often – I mean, you often see that type of team as the four seed in one of these regionals. That's not the case. This time it's Utah. It's the champion of the Pac-12. You know, think about how strong West Coast baseball often is, Logan. And this year, you know, the Pac-12 is the number four RPI conference. You know, they are the lowest rated Power Five conference except for the Big Ten, which is number seven in the conference RPI. Utah is 25-27 overall, two games under 500. They went 19-11. In Pac-12 conference play. They don't even get in this tournament if they don't win the conference and win it outright, because the conference winner in that league gets the automatic bid. They do not have a conference tournament. So Utah at 25-27 is in the tournament as a four seed. They're going to have a pretty good right-handed pitcher in Jason Rose to throw against Ole Miss. You know, one of my criticisms about Ole Miss this year, Logan, had been that they did not hit good pitching well. That's kind of changed in the last month. This is a much improved Ole Miss offense right now. They really swung it well in four games in the SEC tournament. Went 3-1 there, hit .314, hit some good pitchers. Really kind of reversed course on some pitchers that had really controlled them in the regular season. One being Clark Schmidt, the ace for South Carolina. Another being Heath Holder, who in essence became Georgia's ace. He was their most effective pitcher this year. The Rebels turned the tables on both of those guys. The two other teams in the Oxford Regional, number two seed Tulane, which is playing in Oxford in a regional for the third time. Tulane won that 2004 regional after Ole Miss lost in its first two games. Tulane was also a part of the 2006 Oxford Regional, and the Green Wave is back for this one as well. Pretty good team, a 29 RPI, 39-19. Here's what you need to know about those guys. They are 2-0 against LSU this season. And the other is Boston College out of the ACC, which is the number one RPI conference in the country, just a few points ahead of the SEC. Different conferences, I think more depth in the ACC and more quality at the top in the SEC. But if there's one guy you hope not to face in this tournament, I believe it would be Boston College right-hander Justin Dunn. And he's going to pitch the opening game of the regional against Tulane, and that's good news for Ole Miss. Baseball America rates him number 60 among all college prospects, number 39 among pitchers. He's rated the number 11 prospect in the ACC. He's been a closer and a starter. He's a starter now. He's 3-1 with a 1.35 ERA in 53 1/3 innings, 55 strikeouts, 15 walks. And usually the talk, Logan, when you get one of these northern teams coming in is, how will they handle the humidity? Well, in the humidity 2 weeks ago, Dunn threw a complete game in a win over number 22 Georgia Tech. So in a nutshell, that's the Oxford Regional there. Both very strong regionals as the national baseball media have pointed out. Many have said that the Ole Miss field will be the most competitive, the Oxford Regional, and certainly the RPI numbers back up Mississippi State. Logan, I'm really interested to see if State wins and the University of Louisiana at Lafayette, remember the hyphen, wins its regional. Will the visiting Cajuns media have to sit outside? What do you think?
I would, there's enough room, and I don't take anything against their media. Mine's against their SIDs for forcing us to be the guinea pigs for against the Ole Miss media who came in the next week 2 years ago with an awful setup in Lafayette. Yeah. I mean, it was just awful. I mean, I really don't know how any other way to describe it. It was like they had never hosted anything before. And
well, be careful here, Logan. You know, podcasts have gotten some former Mississippi State media in trouble.
And like I said, I'm not going to talk about the city. I enjoyed the city, ate well there, and you know, it was just from a working standpoint, it was not ideal working circumstances for me. Like I said, it just and I don't hold anything towards their media whatsoever. I mean, it was just a bad setup, and I understand that you guys had it a whole lot better the next week.
I don't know about a whole lot. I think both groups there, the media covering from Mississippi and the media relations staff at ULL were kind of on alert there and had antennas up and that sort of thing. I'll tell you this, Logan, going back to that weekend 2 years ago as we close, one thing that stood out to me about Lafayette hosting the Super Regional and doing a pretty good job with it, or doing the best they could for the facility they had, and what had gone on the week before when State visited there for the Regional, when they hosted the Regional that year, their main media relations person, their main guy, was not there. Matt Sullivan was not there at that Regional because he was off with the ULL softball team in the College World Series. I remember that. And you hire good people and you trust good people, but I'm telling you, things just run smoother sometimes when that lead guy is there making decisions and putting people in places. And I think I would guess that had some effect on what happened at the Regional, and maybe that helped why we didn't experience some of those things in the Super Regional. Folks, that's it for this edition of Double Coverage. We thank you for clicking in with this production of the Northeast Mississippi Daily Journal. Be sure to check out The Memo 3 times a week with Brad Locke and Derek Russell, and also Prep Rally every Wednesday with Brad Locke and Gene Phelps. We'll be back with you a week from now, maybe Thursday, maybe Friday, depending on what's going on. Could be two teams still alive in the Super Regional round, so we'll see. Folks, thanks for being with us.